Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. It is Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. It's Monday morning. Monday morning is jokey time. We'll get to that. We're going to be talking about the best rock and roll movies of all time. Yesterday was the third anniversary of Prince's death, so we're going to talk some Prince stories and talk a little bit about him and him and his history and all that cool stuff. And today is Earth Day, so we'll talk a little bit about that. All of that and more. You can always contact us at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And that's what's coming up on the show. Also, Monday morning means it's time for the movie reviews. Eric Childress, Jim Laskowski join me every Monday morning to talk about the movies. And then Eric sticks around, talks about his box office report that he writes about every Sunday day and after at the end of the weekend. So we always talk about it on Monday mornings. So let's get to that. And let's welcome Eric. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hello.
And Jim, welcome to the show.
Hello, Nick. How you doing?
All right. So, you guys, Eric, for the Chicago Critics Film Festival, you guys have some big announcements for this week, right? Coming up.
Yeah, this Friday we're going to be announcing the full schedule and lineup. We'll be teasing a few titles early in the morning, and then we'll be doing a full shout out for the entire lineup. The schedule will be released, and individual tickets will go on sale.
And so, but now people can get like the pass for the whole thing, right? Correct?
Yeah, the full passes have been available for a few weeks. Those are still available, and they'll be available on Friday as well. But there's going to be a few screenings once they get announced on Friday. Are going to go very fast. I promise you that. Mm-hmm. And it might be a good idea to get those passes because those have not sold out yet.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. So big announcement will be on Friday, and you can always check out the Chicago Critics Film Festival website. Can't tell everybody about that website. They can go to it now and check it out.
Yeah, it's ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com. As always, we're going to be at the Music Box Theater, so there's a link at the website for you to buy those passes right now. They take you right to the Music Box website. Like I said, you can follow on Twitter. There's the handle for the film festival is CriticsFF, @CriticsFF. Mm-hmm. So if you want to follow that, you can get the social media sneak preview that we're going to be doing. Nick, I am pretty positive you're going to be at least at two of the screenings this year.
Okay.
Based on the guests that we're going to have,
yeah,
you will be there.
Okay. All right. I'm assuming that, yeah, okay. I will probably be there.
Yeah.
So, all right. Very, very cool. And we're excited about that. Oh, give everybody the dates, too, just so people know.
Oh, yeah, of course. May 17th through the 23rd. So we'll begin on a Friday night. It's going to be a fantastic opening night, which will be announced on this Friday as well, all the way up to Thursday, May 23rd.
Okay. All right. A full week at the beautiful Music Box Theater. So there you go. And it is beautiful. I was there Saturday night. As everybody knows, it's a lovely theater. And we got treated to, of course, some fantastic organ music live before the movie, which is always a treat.
Always.
So, anyway. All right. Well, there you go. That's the Chicago Critics Film Festival. Keep track of that. Big announcements on Friday. And it's going to be exciting. So, all right. Let's get to the new movies. By the way, I'm the only one who saw Penguins.
I guess so.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let me quickly. It's a documentary about penguins. So there you go.
There you go.
But it's about one penguin in particular. They follow the life of this one penguin, and they call him Steve. It's just basically covers the life of this really funny and entertaining penguin that they discovered while making this documentary, and they decided that they would follow him. So they follow Steve through, like, his impending fatherhood and his life and how he deals with the other penguins and what the penguins have to go through and all that cool stuff. And now everybody knows that March of the Penguins was one of the biggest surprise hits of the early aughts.
One of the biggest documentaries of all time.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that has a lot to do with the people just like penguins.
Yeah.
I mean, they're fantastic. They're fantastic animals. And so this one is not narrated by, oddly, not narrated by Morgan Freeman. This one is narrated by Ed Helms. which I find interesting. It's Ed Helms is doing the narration here. So it doesn't have that, it feels official with Morgan Freeman voice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I got to say, the footage is spectacular. I mean, the you know, the Disney Nature brand has put out, they put out like a documentary every Earth Day, every Earth Day weekend, they put one out. And they continue to do extraordinary stuff with coverage and with, you know, the stuff that they've captured on film and how it looks. They put a lot of work into this movie, and it shows. And it really shows these animals in their natural habitat, and they also, you know, like having this sort of like storyline following this one penguin, I think was a smart decision, and adds a little bit of drama to the proceedings. Incredible footage. If you like nature documentaries, this is a really, really good one. See it on the biggest screen possible. And I'm recommending it. And it's obviously good for all, you know, all ages, all families, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. And again, really, really, really beautiful to look at, and with some real stunning, cinematography. And it didn't even crack the top 10.
No.
Wow. Okay.
All right. Oh.
Yeah. I feel kind of bad. I feel bad for Steve.
Poor penguins.
Poor Steve. All right. Well, let's get to it. Jim, why don't you tell us about Teen Spirit?
All righty. Yeah, this is the directorial debut from actor Max Minghella, who, he kind of wanted to make or put his own stamp on the music world here.
For people who don't know who he is, he's an actor. He's been in a ton of stuff. Most recently, he is the sort of male lead, sort of romantic, if you want to say, romantically to Elizabeth Moss in Handmaid's Tale. That's the thing that he's most known for right now, and this is his directorial debut.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, I remember him vividly too from Social Network as well. And right. Yeah, he's done some good work throughout his career as an actor. And here he kind of wanted to tell a story of a talented underdog and her rise to stardom. And of course, Elle Fanning is here, and she stars as Violet. She's a kind of a lonely teenager living on like a little island south of England with her Polish mother, and I would say she's practically a farm girl. And she's introverted and a little isolated with very few friends. However, she does connect intensely with her iPod full of songs. And, you know, when she's not staring into the horizon with her beloved horse, she's dancing by herself to No Doubt's Just a Girl or Tegan and Sarah's I Was a Fool. She performs that song at an open mic, and right from the get-go, you know this girl has a gift. And when she's not doing what she loves, she's kind of doing mundane things like working at the farm, serving drinks as a waitress, or going to school. But one day, she finds out that an American Idol-like singing competition comes to town, and that competition is actually called Teen Spirit. She applies and goes through the ranks pretty quickly, and I know that she has a mother who's really, really not into this at all. Of course, she's trying to fight, just the authority figures in her life that don't believe in her. But she does find kind of an unlikely mentor in Vladimir, who he's a recovering alcoholic who used to be an opera singer, and he just really wants to make sure she succeeds and gets proper training, especially with her voice. And so ultimately, she experiences the ups and downs of signing up for this, wild adventure in her small town. And we follow her journey in kind of the classic underdog tradition where, someone possesses great talent and alongside an older mentor tries, to believe in herself while making a name for herself in the music industry and in hopes of winning this, singing competition. So I thought this was a pretty interesting movie to pair this week with another story about a struggling musician that we'll get to shortly here. But this one is very different in execution.
I would imagine. I would totally imagine. I haven't even seen Teen Spirit, I haven't even seen Teen Spirit, and I would absolutely imagine that the execution is completely different.
It is far more conventional, and it follows the same beats and notes that you would come to expect. As I'm watching it, I'm almost thinking of it as like, well, this is kind of like The Karate Kid only with pop music. And, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because I'm a sucker for a good underdog movie and, of course, movies about music. But, you know, what really ultimately saved this for me was Elle Fanning. I mean, she does her own singing, and she throws herself into this role wholeheartedly. You know, clearly she was also the highlight of something like The Neon Demon, because even when she's surrounded by subpar material, I just think her conviction, her vulnerability, it really allows you to connect with her character here especially. She is quite fearless, also struggles with, you know, insecurity about her talent. But at the same time, I do got to say that there are flaws here. There are definitely one too many pop song montages, almost as much as Rocky IV. Only instead of training for the big fight, she's dancing or practicing for the big show. So there's a lot of that. And I don't think Minghella did a whole lot stylistically here. You know, he hasn't really distinguished himself in any way. So this is kind of like the definition of a debut feature where he's trying to find his own voice. But he's clearly invested in the story and in the material here. So it has a very familiar storyline. It plays kind of like a fairy tale in some regards. And it's not executed in a way that makes it quite as memorable as you would hope. But, you know, Elle Fanning's the main star, and that's kind of why I'm able to give this a mild recommendation, because she pretty much hits all the right notes here, even if we've seen this material many times before.
Yeah, she's great, and her sister's great. They're both enormously talented young women. So that's Teen Spirit.
Sure.
It's playing at a bunch of theaters here in Chicago, and it's out right now. All right, Eric, Jim, hang on, okay, guys?
Okay.
All right, there you go. Eric and Jim are here. We're going to take a break for the news. When we come back, we got a few more movies to review. Eric is going to stick around, and we'll talk about the box office for this Easter weekend right here on 720 WGN. Everybody, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time. We're going to talk about rock and roll movies, the best rock and roll movies. Two rock and roll movies opened up this week with Teen Spirit and Her Smell. And so in conjunction with that, we're going to talk about some great rock and roll movies and get you guys in. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, and stay with us on our Facebook page, which is updated during the show, and it's interactive. And it's facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Eric Childress, Jim Liskowski join me every Monday morning to review the new movies. We've got new movies to review. We're going to continue to do that, and then we'll talk about the box office as well. Let's welcome the guys back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Eric, tell us about Fast Color. I saw the trailer for this thing, and I'm really intrigued by the
trailer. And I think you should be. This actually was our opening night film at the Chicago Critics Film Festival last year. We had Gugu Mbatha-Raw and producer Jordan Horowitz at the festival. This is a movie that premiered at South by Southwest last year. Gugu Mbatha-Raw stars as a woman who is it's a sort of a drought-plagued future. She's traveling around because she is actually has some supernatural abilities. The one that is sort of taking precedent is that she seems to have a number of seizures that actually cause seismic shockwaves wherever she's at. So that actually is kind of a bit of a danger to not just herself, but the surrounding communities. So government agents are definitely after her, trying to experiment on her, find out what the connection she might have to the Earth, if one's causing the other way around. In her journeys, she ends up going to the one place that she thinks she might actually be safe, and that is home. She has been estranged from her mother from some time, and she goes back home where not just her mother resides, but also the daughter, the young daughter that she left behind. I don't want to say too much more about the plot because it kind of spins and turns in a number of different ways. And you'll probably, some people have been kind of describing this film, certainly in the reviews and on Twitter, as, you know, a real kind of fresh take on the superhero genre. Don't be fooled too much that you're going in expecting that you're going to get some sort of X-Men-like, action film. This is definitely not that. This is definitely more of an introspective film about female empowerment and the kind of the suppression of female and the powers that they wield and have for some time. It's no accident that everyone that's after these characters are, you know, white men. So there's a lot of interesting things going on there. And I mean, I'll admit that the first time I saw the film at South by Southwest, I wasn't entirely on board with it. But when we were considering the movie for our festival, we got a chance to take a look at it again, and the elements of it worked a lot better the second time, probably because of certain expectations that I had going in based on the description of what I had seen or heard about at South by Southwest. It's not that type of film. I think Gugu Mbatha-Raw, Lorraine Toussaint, who plays her mother, are both very good in the film. David Strathairn plays the local sheriff, who is also involved in tracking down these women. It's a really interesting film, and it's a shame that, you know, a story like this, can't quite find the type of audience that these kind of films need to survive.
Yeah, well, it's also a shame that the two theaters that they put them at. It's only at two theaters. It's at the Showplace Icon on Roosevelt.
Yeah,
and at the Studio Movie Grill in Chatham.
Yeah, which is right.
What?
It's more in my neck of the woods. It's unfortunate that a movie like this, I mean, I don't think it's on VOD at the moment. I don't know if it's actually going to be, but there is actually talk of this possibly turned into an actual television series as well, not with the same cast. I don't know if that's still going to be going through, but I understand that was part of how this movie actually came to be picked up by Lionsgate sometime after it showed at our festival. So, hope that a movie like this will find its audience. You're probably not going to see it in theaters past this week, but it's definitely an experience, and the people who saw it at the festival last year had a really solid experience watching this thing. And like I said, I was not on board the first time I saw it, but it definitely grew on me the more I thought about it, and the second viewing really helped a ton. So I'm definitely recommending Fast Color.
All right, cool. Yeah, it looks really, really intriguing, and I'll definitely, if it comes out VOD, I'll definitely watch it. Also, by the way, I didn't get a chance to get out there and see this, but Wild Nights with Emily opened. It's only playing at the Landmark, and it stars Molly Shannon as Emily Dickinson.
Yeah.
And I saw Molly Shannon on, I think it was Seth's show, or one of the late shows. And I saw a clip from it, and it's kind of a comedy, but it also deals with, the private life of Emily Dickinson and her relationship with this special woman, and how it, she kept writing about her and at a time when it wasn't accepted. You know what I mean? And I think it's interesting casting that Molly Shannon is playing Emily Dickinson. So I'm really intrigued, and I really do want to see it. I didn't get a chance to see it over the weekend, but I would imagine it's probably just going to be one weekend out. That would be my guess.
Yeah, this actually played at South by Southwest last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been sitting out there for a while, and I think IFC has it or something like that.
Yeah.
They have it out in theaters this week.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I thought that was kind of interesting casting, and you guys know how much I love Molly Shannon, so that's why I'm
going
to it. All right, Jim, why don't you tell us about The Curse of La Llorona?
All right. Well, this is the latest horror film that takes place in the Conjuring universe, although it's kind of shoehorned in there a little bit. But this is from first-time feature director Michael Chabes. And the story is based on the Mexican legend of La Llorona, who is also known as the Weeping Woman. And back in the 17th century, she drowned her two kids after her husband's cheating made her very upset. And ever since then, well, her spirit sort of flits and hovers around in a ghostly white dress, killing the children of other vulnerable mothers out there. And that's sort of the backstory. I almost felt like I was telling a ghost story on, like, by a campfire for a second there. But we now cut to Los Angeles in 1973, where social worker Anna Garcia, played by Linda Cardellini from last year's Green Book, who starts to suspect that something is not quite right with one of her latest cases. She learns that a mother named Patricia Alvarez has been forcing her two young sons to live in a cramped closet. So, obviously, she wants to send these boys to foster care. And then La Llorona decides to take control of this particular situation. So, yeah, so much for Child Protective Services being able to help out in this situation. And so, after all that, experience happens, Anna is driven with grief, and Mother Patricia basically calls on the mythic ghost to curse Anna. And she's a widow of her own, raising her own two children. And with this curse in place, well, now the Weeping Woman is back in business. With her evil spirit now has her sights set on Anna's children. So, yeah, if you've seen the trailer, you'll know this is essentially a ghost story, but should stir up a sense of dread, I would say.
Okay, hang on a second, Jim. Jim, hang on a second. We got to take a break,
yeah.
Okay? We'll take a break. We'll get more from Jim about the Curse of La Llorona, and then we'll find out what Eric thought of it and what I thought of it here on WGN. That's coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. We're going to talk about the best rock and roll movies and rock and roll movies in general. Yesterday was the third anniversary of Prince's passing, so we're going to talk a little Prince as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here until 5 a.m., Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6. For your morning drive. We're in the middle of our Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress and Jim Laskowski join us. Let's welcome Eric back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you much.
All right. So we were just hearing Jim describe The Curse of La Llorona, the new horror movie that just came out this weekend. So pick it up where you left off, Jim. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, as I was saying, when I first saw the trailers for this, I was like, okay, well, this could go either way, or maybe it'll just kind of be down the middle and a little familiar, because certainly when you see the trailers, there's the usual popping out of nowhere, or it's quiet for a little while, then suddenly the sound mix is turned to 11, so you can get a good jump scare in there. And, I was a little curious, because this is, a film that is kind of being sold as a, very Latino story. But at the same time, it doesn't feel like the writers or producers gave much thought to Latino characters or culture, which is kind of the main issue I have with it in general. I mean, I'll give credit where credit's due. There are a couple of cool Sam Raimi-esque zooms and a few flourishes that made me perk up a little bit. But, this really just didn't gel for me in the end. I mean, like I mentioned at the top, it's been curiously kind of just dropped into the Conjuring franchise, and to me it seems to be aping James Wan, right down to some of the slow tracking shots where, again, you wait for something to pop out, and of course it does, and, you know, you get your little scare, and that's kind of all this movie has going for it. And, you know, just because you have all the pieces in place doesn't mean the jigsaw puzzle is going to come together. And, you know, it's kind of felt like a haunted ghost story light without much to distinguish itself. I think if you had maybe like a guy like Mike Flanagan on board, there might have been more to appreciate, especially stylistically. There's kind of a cool underwater scene where Cardellini dives into the pool and tries to drag her daughter out from the spirit's claws. I think Cardellini's kind of the bright spot here. She does her best with the material. I think she's, you know, committed to this character. Raymond Cruz from Breaking Bad shows up and plays like a rent and exorcist type of character, and I think he's just underplaying it a little too much to where he comes across as kind of stilted. And for the most part, most of this movie felt that way to me. It didn't really grab me, and it felt like a copy of a copy of a copy. And nothing is explored with a whole lot of depth here. So, yeah, I'm not able to recommend this particular horror film, unfortunately, because all it really did was provide some jump scares without a whole lot of weight to them at all. So, thumbs down for me.
All right, Eric, what'd you think?
This movie bugged me on multiple levels. For starters, the curse itself, I thought is really stupid. I don't care if it's based in any kind of reality.
It is actually based in a real thing. What's really funny is Jimmy Kimmel. You know Jimmy Kimmel's security guard Guillermo.
Yes.
Okay. Well, he had Linda Cardellini on last week, and when he was doing the intro, he's like Guillermo, La Llorona, is that real? He's like, yes, Jimmy, it's real. And he was totally freaking out. Like, it was, I guess, from his childhood. He was totally freaking out. He's like, no, I'm not seeing this movie. It was hilarious how freaked out he got just at the mention of it. So,
well, maybe Guillermo, we could have Guillermo on to maybe explain the curse a little better to myself, because from what I gather from how the movie explains it, that this crazy woman was drowning her own children back in the day, okay, and because her husband was cheating on her. Okay, so to get back at him, she kills her children, but then feels so bad about it that she actually then kills herself. And then, okay, so for some reason, the over gods or whatever curse her to then find children to replace her children in the underworld or something like that. I'm like, well, is that a curse? Because that's going to make her feel worse, isn't it? So is it the idea that she's going to feel worse, so shouldn't she be ambivalent about wanting to do this? Like, none of it made any sense to me. The curse is just dumb, okay? And I'm probably going to be visited by this weeping woman tonight as a result of it. But, you know, screw her. You know, the people, you know, her and the little grudge children can go to hell.
Yeah, well, just, you know, Eric, don't take a bath tonight. That's all. You know?
Yeah, I never do.
Okay.
Yeah. I shower.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay, so there's that. And then, you know, And then after that, it's just like the idea of a movie that is centered around killing children really just didn't sit well with me. I mean, there's so many movies over the years where children are put in peril, they're put in danger. Some better than others. But you know, I mean, it was considered disturbing back in 1986 when David Bowie was stealing a baby in Labyrinth, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And now we have a movie, you know, 30 some years later, where someone's actually like. I mean, there's a scene in this movie where the ghost tries to drown a child in a bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just so kind of icked out by it all. And the entire movie is just based upon this woman coming to kill these children. And that's one thing if the movie wants to have a discussion about that and to deal in the kind of stuff that Jim was talking about with the characters and, you know, what, you know, their personal lives and things like that. and legends and mental illness and stuff like that. But this movie's not about that. It's you know, connected in some way to the Conjuring universe. The same priest that was in the original Annabelle is in this movie. He's the one that tried to explain the curse to me. It didn't quite work. This movie makes peak silliness when Linda Cardellini she says to the Raymond Cruz character, "Are you just gonna rub eggs on everything around here?" You know, I'm just like, okay, well, that's exactly how I kind of feel about this movie. And it seems like Michael Chaves just kind of watched the other movies in the Conjuring film series just to see kind of what works. Like, okay, I'm supposed to, you know, have a boo scare here. I'm like, oh, here's the clapping scene from Conjuring. Let me give you my own version of that. Let's drag the children down the hallway and make a lot of loud sounds. But it doesn't amount to anything. It's not really scary. It's kind of icky. The curse is really stupid. And you don't really care about anything in this movie, which is really unfortunate because, you know, it's nice to see Linda Cardellini have a leading role in something. I'm just sorry that it's just something this stupid. I thought Annabelle was the low point in the Conjuring universe, but I think this actually is it now.
Wow, I liked it.
Wow,
I did. I liked it.
Wow,
I did. I thought it was well made. Linda Cardellini, by the way, let me just get this out of the way. I'm in love with her, and I've been in love with her since Freaks and Geeks. So that's a given, right?
Sure.
There. I think she's really good in this movie, and I think she captures a real emotion, and I think the two kids are great. I think her two kids are really, really good in this movie. It's a silly movie, there's no question about it, but I thought it built up suspense pretty well. I thought there were some legitimate jump scares in it. I thought the mood was really nice. I thought Raymond Cruz was pretty hilarious as the movie basically turns into The Exorcist in the final third. And I thought a lot of the scares were pretty great. I love the scene where he puts this dust on at the threshold of the house and she's not supposed to break it, but the kid wants her dolly. I thought that scene was really good. I thought there was a lot of suspenseful stuff. And it is disturbing. You know, the content of this movie, you guys, is PG-13. It's rated R, and it's rated R because, Eric, exactly why. Because of the subject matter. Because, like, I mean, you see a couple of kids get drowned early in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty horrifying, you know? And the peril that these kids, young kids, are put in is really striking. And that's why the movie's rated R. There's nothing R about the violence or anything like that. This is a PG-13 movie. But because of the, you know, and I actually thought there were some good scares in it. and I was with it from beginning to end. It has, you know, when you have someone like Linda Cardellini as your lead, the person that you're following, I cared about her. I liked her, and I liked the subplot that involved the fact that she may not be suitable to be a parent when in fact she's a social worker. And I liked that little bit that they did. I thought that was cool.
The part where she takes her children to a murder scene is not good parenting.
Yeah, she's going to leave them at home?
Well, you know, might have been better.
anyway, I liked it. I thought it was scary. And I will quote my mother after the movie, and I didn't quite feel this way, but I will quote my mother. My mother said, "I thought I was going to have a heart attack." It scared the hell out of my mother. Now, I don't agree with that. I think it's kind of a scary movie and a fun movie, but I liked it. So I'm giving it a good review. You guys?
Okay.
All right, everybody hang on. Eric and Jim are going to hang on when we come back. Oh, we've got another little movie to talk about right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, as we are every weekday morning from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, and we are doing the Monday morning movie reviews right now. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you would like to join us at some point, we're going to talk rock and roll movies and Prince passed away yesterday, 3 years ago. It's also Earth Day. We'll jump into that, too. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and let's get back to it. We got one more movie to review, and then Eric's going to stick around, and we're going to talk box office. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back. All right.
Thank you again.
Okay, Eric, tell us about Her Smell.
Okay, well, this is the new film from writer-director Alex Ross Perry. It stars Elizabeth Moss as Becky Something. That's her actual name, or at least her stage name, because she is the leader of an all-girl rock band, and the film follows her for a good portion through her sort of crazy, sort of self-destructive ways, mostly in the backstage area as they're preparing for gigs. She's not good with her bandmates. She's not good with her management team, not good with her mom, played by Virginia Madsen, and not good with her family, and the child that she has and the ex-husband that she has. And this movie, takes us through this life, the lifestyle of a rocker, and it takes us through what are basically sort of extended acts, extended vignettes, different portions of this woman's life. And it is basically sort of a story told in five acts, and the first three of them are, for many people, probably very hard to sit through. Way that this character is not exactly a pleasant time to be around. You actually feel, almost like there's like a self-abuse going on watching this character and watching her, the way she treats these people and the way, she's kind of treating herself and not really respecting the position she's in, nor the people, any of the people around her. And it kind of gives you pause as to whether or not you want to even be in this situation with this character. This is the type of movie that in the past, I tend to tune out of because of that very reason. Like, why am I here with this character? Why do I really want anything good? Am I just watching this character go down a path of self-destruction that's just going to end with that? However, for the first three acts of this movie, I wasn't there. I had thoughts of that while I was watching it, but there are a couple things that really pulled me through the first three acts. One is the way that Alex Ross Perry shoots the movie, and the way that there's almost single shots of him zooming backstage, trying to catch up with this character and everything that's going on around her. Visually, it's a really striking, visceral piece of work. It's really kind of hard to take your eyes off. And the only reason you'd be taking your eyes off the camera work is because you're looking for Elizabeth Moss, who gives a performance that is almost indescribably good because you just don't know where to begin. Yes, her character is unpleasant. Yes, her character is loud and abrasive, and everything that you don't want to be around in your regular life, let alone spending time with in a movie that's going to run over 2 hours. But where this movie then takes this turn in the final two acts. The fourth act of this film begins the story of redemption. And I'm not trying to give away too much here, but this is the moment where everything turned from, wow, this movie's working on me in a way that I didn't expect, to, oh my God, I might be witnessing some kind of little miracle here with this film. This is a film that I saw at the Toronto Film Festival last year, and at that during one of the reports, I told you about the film, and I made a statement on the air back then that this is going to be a movie where Bryan Adams made Nick DiGiulio cry. And
you
I pressed you on this, Nick, and you're going to respond to it.
You are absolutely right, my friend.
Yes. and let's just say the final two acts of this film go from heartbreak and sadness to absolute intensity once again, but intensity for a much different reason. This is a film that, again, it's seemingly going to be lost in the myriad. I mean, I don't know who's asleep at the wheel in the set of release of this and Teen Spirit, you know, week to week, back to back like this. That's a mistake on both of these distributors' parts. Not that either of them are getting a huge release anyway, but still. But this is clearly one of the best films of the year. And like I said, I preached last year at Toronto. I said, this is a movie that's going to be very hard for a lot of people to get through. But just trust me, stick with it, and you will be rewarded for it by the end. I stand by those statements, and I hope more people will see this movie, because not only is it one of the best films of the year, but it's going to be very hard to top Elizabeth Marshall's performance as the best of 2019.
Yeah, by any human being.
Yeah.
Not just actresses, by any human being. All right, Jim, go ahead.
I concur with that statement 100%. And so this movie, it kind of wrecked me, I would say. And it's also the reason why I love movies. I want to experience an emotional roller coaster where I'm feeling many different things throughout its entire running time, including not being 100% on board with a character's behavior. And then watching them experience, you know, some form of resilience, more or less. And what can you say? I mean, what can you say about Elizabeth Moss? It's, you know, this is the year of great films in which Elizabeth Moss looks into a mirror and has the perfect look in every way that says so much about her character without words. And she has this awareness about her behavior that is just, it's interesting. It's like, you know, the car wreck kind of viewing experience where you don't want to see somebody act this way, but you also can't turn away. And yet she has this radiance about her at the same time, which, you know, makes her a perfect front woman for a band. And when I talked to Alex Ross Perry, he said that watching a documentary about the band L7 was kind of one of his key inspirations. And I grew up loving, you know, riot girl bands and grunge bands. And so this one was just like, tailor made for me in a lot of ways. And it's impossible, you know, not to look at the character of Becky and think of Courtney Love.
Yeah.
It's so painful to watch at the same time. I mean, Eric brought up those first three acts, and it's intensely visceral, and you're watching somebody go through, you know, the worst times and self-destruction and addiction. So you have to prepare yourself for feeling that whirlwind of emotions and heartbreak. But at the core, this is one of the great performances I've ever seen. It made me think a little bit of Jennifer Jason Leigh in Georgia, but Elizabeth Moss just makes it her own and makes it fresh and very intense. But that fourth act comes around, and boy oh boy, I was a complete mess. And you know, the very final image of the film too is really powerful. So if we just want to spend the rest of the show praising how great Elizabeth Moss is, we can do that. But for my money, this is the best film of 2019 so far. So please go out and support it and see it immediately.
It's only at the Music Box, right? Is that the only
yes.
place it's playing?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's only playing at the Music Box. I will say this. I went Saturday night, and it was the night that we were gonna interview the director tonight. He was going to be on the show. They screwed up. His handler screwed it up. His flight was leaving earlier than we had expected, so we didn't get a chance to hook up with Alex Ross Perry. I would love to have had him on the show. But anyway, I went Saturday night. Obviously, it was packed. A lot of that has to do with because he was there, and our friend Steve Procopi conducted a really great Q&A afterwards. And it was a great experience all the way around. But let me take a break, and we'll come back. I'll give you my full review, okay, guys?
Mm-hmm.
All right, hold on a second. It's Eric and Jim. We'll come back. I'll tell you what I thought of her smell, and then we'll do the box office as well right here on 720 WGN. The Sox are looking to crush a few at Camden as the Southsiders battle the O's. White Sox Orioles tonight at 6 on WGN TV Sports. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here till 5 a.m. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We're going to jump into rock and roll movies from the past that we love and some interesting ones and much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's get back to the movie reviews. Before the break, Eric and Jim told us about the new movie Her Smell with Elizabeth Moss playing at the Music Box. They both loved it. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you much.
All right. I've not made it it's not a real secret how much I love Elizabeth Moss. I've made that pretty well known. I think she's the best actress on the planet right now. And I love her in everything. The work that she does on Handmaid's Tale is amazing. The work that she does in everything is great. You know, she's got that small role in Us, but she leaves a massive imprint in that movie. Clearly she works really well with this director. This is the third movie that she's made with him. I didn't think she was going to top Queen of Earth as far as performances go, but she does. This is a spectacular performance. It is a movie that is, and you guys are absolutely right, they throw you in the deep end. He throws you right into the deep end, and you know, you're there. You're in this insanity for a good portion of the movie, and it is relentlessly sort of intense. It's a really intense experience, from the use of music to sound effects. It's like he's tightening the screw with every scene. It just gets like more, you know, it's more nerve wracking as it continues to go, and her intensity level never wavers. She is 1,000% committed to this really screwed up character, and unbelievable, and it's beautifully shot and really intensely, you know, made. And as you guys say, the first three acts of the movie, it's hard, man. It is hard. It's very intense. It's almost paced like a horror film in that regard.
Sure. It reminded me of Mother a little bit.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's that kind of insane intensity. And then to switch on a dime for the last part of the film, which is just so gorgeous and really to have a character that is just so despicable for the first part and really screwed up and obviously, you know, addiction issues, just really the worst kind of stuff happening to herself and everybody around her for the first part of the movie. And to get that amazing feeling of redemption is damn near impossible to do in a movie. You know what I mean? It really is. And to successfully show what can happen if people attempt to try to get their lives together. And then that last part, the fifth part of it, is so intense as well, but like you said, Eric, in a different way. Like at this point, there's like the you know, what's on the line here in that segment of the movie is huge. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautifully made movie, and obviously Elizabeth Moss is great. I want to mention the other actors, though, because this is Elizabeth Moss's show. There's no question about it. It's the best performance of the year. I'm not going to see a better performance by anybody this year. There's no question about it, and I'm positive of that. But, man, the supporting performances are great in this movie, too. Dan Stevens, who plays her ex-husband, is terrific in this movie. Her bandmates are fantastic. Agnes Dane, who plays like her closest friend, has some incredible, intense, beautiful moments in this movie, especially in that fourth act. And Gail Rankin, who I adore on Glow, is fantastic in this. Even Amber Heard is good. That's how good this movie is. Amber Heard is good in this movie. Can we talk about the brilliant casting of Virginia Madsen for a second? I mean, that's unbelievably brilliant casting, and she's terrific in it. And damn it, Eric Stoltz rules.
He does.
He's so great in this movie, and how he has to walk that tightrope between everybody else that's in the room with him, you know, and her, and try to keep you know, Becky under control, and try to keep the band together, and you know, and try to work with the promoters and all the other people. He's great in this movie. I loved everything about it. It runs 135 minutes. I swear to God, it felt like it was 90 minutes. Because it moves like a bullet. It never stops. It just never stops. And she never lets up on that gas pedal. It's an astonishing performance. I mean, it really, really is. She is just Elizabeth, I mean, she's just the best. This is the best performance I've seen all year, and absolutely one of the best movies of the year. And it's an emotional roller coaster ride that I found. You know, by the end, I was completely drained, but in a good way, in a satisfying way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The way they set definitely. This character up, the way they throw you right into the whirlwind, and then you feel completely satisfied by the end of this movie. It's a great movie, a great, great movie. And again, you know, there aren't enough superlatives to describe Elizabeth Moss's performance in this movie. It's only at the Music Box. I can't recommend it. Now, again, this might be a rough go for some people. It's a very intense movie, and you're watching a character who is at rock bottom in every possible way, by the way she treats herself, by the way she treats others, by the way she treats her baby, which is also, like, terrifying. But, man, by the end, there's this beautiful redemption, and damn it, I cried during a Bryan Adams song. And you were right, Eric. You were right. I was weeping during that scene. And she sings the whole song.
Yes.
It's not like a little snippet. It's one take, and it's the whole song. And I was like, okay, I don't even understand what I'm feeling right now.
Yeah.
This is a Bryan Adams song, and I'm crying. So I can't recommend this movie highly enough. Best movie I've seen all year, and clearly the best performance of the year. So there you go. We kind of like this one.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Next week, there's a little private independent movie coming out, right? Just a little teeny movie?
Yeah, called Endgame.
Oh, right. Yeah. I heard a little bit about it.
Mm-hmm.
get ready. Strap in. It's 3 hours, everybody.
And 1 minute.
Don't forget about that 1 minute.
That's right.
Okay. And you know what the other thing is? Because it's a Marvel movie, you got to sit through all 3 hours of it.
Yeah.
You got to sit through.
No intermission.
You got to sit through. No, I'm just saying, because, you know, normally when credits roll on a 3 hour movie, you leave, but not in this case.
Nope.
Damn Marvel. All right. So we got that next week. Jim, thanks, buddy.
Absolutely, man.
Okay, man, we'll talk to you next week. Okay, there you go. There's Jim. Eric, you're sticking around. Let's go through the box office. Did really well.
It did very well. I think most people were sort of expecting, I mean, it was kind of a down Easter weekend overall, but yeah. I think everyone was sort of expecting this one more in the teens. I mean, it's like 16, 17 million kind of thing. And like by, you know, Saturday morning, they were saying 19, 20, and then by Saturday night, it was up to 26.
It made more than Pet Sematary did on its opening weekend.
It absolutely made more than Pet Sematary. You know, this is probably going to be headed, you know, it'll take probably a serious drop probably next week. But yeah. So, I mean, this thing's going to make probably around, you know, $60 million in the U.S., and it's already made $56 million worldwide. So these Conjuring movies, they're a cash cow for Warner Brothers.
They are, absolutely.
Yeah, $15 million budget, and this thing's already made $56
million. They showed the trailer for the new Annabelle movie, too, before it, and so it just never ends, man.
Nope.
Yep. Okay, so Shazam with $17.3 million, $121 million total. That's solid, right?
Yeah, very, like a 29% drop this week. So his estimate is kind of raised a bit. So it's probably looking at probably in the $160 million range. Mm-hmm. You know, which is still might be seem light for a comic book movie, but I keep calling this DC's Ant-Man, basically.
Yeah.
So the $160 million, they'll be happy with that.
All right. Number three, Breakthrough, which is our spiritual movie of the week, which is...
Yeah, our latest Don't Rely on the Doctors, Just Pray and Everything Will Be Fine movie.
Right.
We seem like we get one of these every other Easter now.
Yeah, exactly.
Miracles from Heaven, what was that, Heaven is for Real,
right?
And this one. Yeah. So.
And that's $14.6 million it made total. Number four, this is amazing, Captain Marvel, $9.1 million, $400 million just in America alone, and... It'll be in the top 10 again next week, so Brie Larson is going to be dominating the box office next week.
Yeah, this is kind of the Black Panther effect from last year.
Yeah, exactly.
Black Panther stuck around long enough.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, shoot, I have to see that movie before I see Endgame.
Exactly.
So this movie actually got a bump. It actually it didn't drop. It made more money this week than last week.
Right.
And a couple of quick stats on it. It's now the 25th highest grossing film of all time. Worldwide.
Wow.
It's about to pass $1.1 billion. And this weekend, and an odd stat that not a lot of people probably bothered to look at, it is the eighth highest seventh weekend of a movie ever.
Wow.
There's a stat for you.
Yeah, that's a deep one, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Number five, Little, $8.4 million, $29 million total.
Yeah, it's not doing great, but, you know.
Dumbo, whatever. Dumbo with 6.8 million, 101 million total. That's not good.
No, it's other than Wonder Park, looking like the second biggest bomb of 2019 at the moment.
Oh, wow. Number seven, Pet Sematary, 4.8 million, bringing its total close to 50 million.
Yeah, I'm still going to kind of finish right around where the 1989 film did, which some might consider a bit of a failure, but small budget, it's making money overseas, so this is a success for Paramount.
All right. And then, man, Missing Link, 4.3 million, only made 12.9 total.
Yeah, I mean, the only positive thing I can say about it is that it had the second lowest drop of the year. Yeah. So people clearly were paying attention to everyone last week and said, like, yeah, hey, you missed this one,
yeah.
Families.
Yeah.
So people, you know, might have taken notice of that. So, you know, but still, it hasn't even made $13 million yet.
Yeah. Have you seen it yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm to blame, too.
Yeah, okay. Number nine is Us with 4.26 million, 170 million total. And it's just a monster success again for Jordan Peele.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably going to pass Get Out. Not by a whole lot, but it's probably going to get settle in right around 180 million. So it's back to back movies. Jordan Peele has made that grossed over 175 million.
Crazy. And then Hellboy. Wow.
Oh boy.
Oh man.
Should be called Ooh Boy.
Yeah. Phew, terrible.
Yeah.
All right.
67% drop. This movie might not make as much as Elektra did.
Oh my God. Wow. There's a statement.
Yeah.
All right. What area are we talking about number wise for next week? Can you even guess at what the Avengers movie is going to make?
Well, I said the there's no way it makes less than 275.
I would totally agree with that. Totally
yeah,
agree.
And I think that whatever happens next weekend, Disney, Marvel, they're going to be trying to squeeze every last dollar out of it so it hits the $300 million mark next weekend.
Yeah. All right.
I think it's going to do just over $300 million.
Okay. I wouldn't be surprised by that. It's going to be a monster.
Yeah.
It's going to be a monster.
Yes.
So, all right. All right, Eric. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
All right, there you go. Eric Childress, everybody, and you can check him out online, and we do the box office and the movie reviews next week. All right, we'll take a quick break on 720 WGN.